Each Wednesday here on the Audio Stash, we get the chance to discuss the science of marijuana with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Mitch is professor of psychology at State University of New York. He's author of the book Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence, and editor of the new book Pot Politics. We have links to the books at normalaudiostash.com. Mitch, welcome back to the Audio Stash today.
Thanks so much, Chris.
Mitch, today we're going to discuss a very juicy topic, sex and marijuana. The ONDCP and DEA would have us believe that smoking marijuana decreases sex drive, yet we hear from Carl Sagan and Ann Dryan that their best sexual experience happened after smoking pot. So let's cut to the chase here. Does smoking marijuana affect your sex drive?
As it turns out, we don't have a lot of data addressing actual desire, and we do have tons and tons of sort of informal clinical reports where people say sex is certainly enhanced during or right after marijuana use, and so it's hard to even entertain the idea that somehow your sex drive would drop with long-term use. Obviously, that's not something that's been a priority among a lot of big funding agencies, so if it does happen, we certainly haven't heard about it.
So when we hear about this anecdotal evidence, are people saying their experience is enhanced or their sex drive is better?
We've got data from as early as the 1980s suggesting that the experience is better. Men report seeing themselves as more giving and that people are generally more sensitive to touch, in part because time is distorted after smoking marijuana. People at least seem to think they spend a lot more time in the sex act. There's a lot of enhanced orgasm reports, both in Charlie Tart's data from 1971 all the way to like ancient Chinese things in 200 AD. So I think this is a pretty consistent effect and one that folks like to talk about. I do want to caution that cannabis is not a lubricant, and we do see a number of drying of mucous membranes, whether it's in your eye or anywhere else, that could be affected, and that's why I have to recommend that people keep that in mind if they're planning on sexual contact after using cannabis.
So that common cotton mouth effect of smoking marijuana isn't just from having the smoke pass over your palate, but it's drying up the body overall as part of the physical effects of marijuana intoxication.
In fact, all mucous membranes are drier after use, and that would be something to make investment in a lubricant worthwhile.
Mitch, you mentioned this sort of temporal shift when folks are smoking marijuana. Is that sense of spending more time having sex in and of itself enhancing the experience?
As it turns out, we don't have data directly addressing that, but it certainly makes a lot of intuitive sense. I think the other thing that we hear a lot is just there's really nice, candid discussions about what you like and what you don't like after cannabis that often don't occur when you're, either using alcohol or no substances at all. And I think more than anything, it's what are the occasions whenever this happens. So people often don't use cannabis before sex unless they know they're going to have enough time and they're going to be in a comfortable setting and they're in all these other situations that seem to contribute to good sexual performance as well. And so what I recommend to folks is if they want to use cannabis to enhance sex, that's great. But think about what are the other things that you're doing when you do that and see, can you do those more often as well? I know parents of young children often find themselves in situations where they're tired and rushed, and what a surprise, it's not as good as things used to be. Well, if they could arrange to, get rest and find an environment where they could be uninterrupted for a longer period, that alone would contribute so much. And then if you want to use cannabis to enhance that further, why, by all means, go ahead.
And Mitch, using the media buzz phrase out there, what about sexual promiscuity? We have a lot of evidence that alcohol increases sexual promiscuity in men and women, but does that happen with cannabis intoxication?
We only have really two published studies suggesting any link between cannabis use and, say, condom use or having unprotected sex or things like that. And I think what happens is there's a subset of folks who are sort of disinhibited in general, sensation seekers, if you will. And so they do report using cannabis and having unsafe sex. We don't have a lot of data showing that it was actually the event when they used cannabis that also led to the unsafe sex. So we don't really know if it's causal so much as just a quality of a certain kind of person. Obviously, with practice, anything like this can help. Does it lead to promiscuity? Well, people who use cannabis also have different attitudes about appropriate numbers of sexual partners, And it's not so much that cannabis leads to these things, but that these are things that correlate. People who enjoy cannabis may also have different ideas about how many sexual partners they should have in their lives or what level of commitment they have to have.
Let's also talk about one of the pop culture legends promoted by the ONDCP, and that is sterility in men. Mitch, can smoking or eating cannabis make a man sterile?
In fact, it's not a complete falsehood. Gabriel Nahas published some data on some men who were living in a hospital and smoked 8 joints a day for 8 days in a row, and their sperm counts did decrease. They didn't go down to the sterility level, and of course, they returned to normal when they were no longer using cannabis. So it's a temporary decrease in sperm count, and I guess, you know, if I had somebody coming to me saying we're having some fertility problems, I would recommend going off for a month or more just to give yourself the chance. But it's nowhere near birth control, and that's the thing that really worries me, is that there may be folks out there thinking that heavy cannabis use would be a good way to prevent conception, and that's just not the case at all.
And what about women? Is there anything that points to marijuana making women less able to conceive?
What's funny is the only data we have are from studies of women who were having fertility problems, and they do have some women in those samples who used cannabis, and they don't show any differences in their ability to conceive, but ironically, they're the ones who had sex more often. So we don't know if it's that they actually do have a lowered probability, but they're having so much sex that that makes up for it, or what. Really, really heavy, absurdly large doses of THC will interrupt estrus, the menstrual cycle, in apes and in certain other primates, but it's the dosages are just so high, it's a ridiculous comparison with humans and normal cannabis consumption.
So there's no way for a woman to smoke a dose of THC high enough to affect conception.
Exactly.
Also, Mitch, let's look at the other side of this. Is it good for our overall sexual health to be intoxicated every time we have sex?
I would not say so. I think the cool thing about sex and relationships is variety, in that sometimes something as simple as, you know, lying on the bed the other way or going into another room of your house can make all this difference. And then making sure that you really get the opportunity to talk about it, to praise your partner for the things you like. And it sometimes can be as simple as, you know, grunting and groaning a little bit more just to make sure that the message gets across what feels good. And suddenly you find you like this person more, and you're much more willing to talk about both positive and negative things more. And the bottom line is, yeah, cannabis can enhance that, but, you know, once in a while is great. If you do it every time, of course, then it's not special anymore, and you end up kind of stuck in a rut as far as that goes.
I'm always amazed, Mitch, when we talk about people who smoke cannabis together, that we have better conversations and gain a deeper understanding of our partners and ourselves. It seems that cannabis is this wonderful catalyst for an at-home version of cognitive behavioral therapy.
Well, what's funny about that is we don't have the placebo control, so I think some couples may have the excuse of, oh, I was high, and can always take back anything they said. But in fact, a lot of folks report being able to share, you know, either feelings or stories of incidents that are really meaningful to them during the intoxication experience, either because they have the excuse of saying, oh, well, I was intoxicated, in case their partner has an adverse reaction, but also they just seem more willing to take risks as far as what they're willing to share, and you see that across a whole bunch of different domains. So, yeah, I think that that's a neat little adjunct to couples' cognitions and their sharing.
We also see in the media and in our spam email boxes the incessant push for erectile dysfunction drugs. I'm not sure how much of a widespread problem this is compared to the marketing. Many of these drugs promote blood flow, however. So can cannabis promote blood flow and thus help with erectile dysfunction?
I think the key on this is this weird United States focus on sex having to require a big, hard penis. That's just not the case. What a wonderful thing it would be to say sexual contact doesn't necessarily mean a certain act and only that one. And I think cannabis often loosens people up with their expectations about what sex has to require in order to happen. And then with that pressure off, yeah, maybe you're more likely to have standard erectile functioning under those circumstances, but also be open to the idea that you can have, you know, a lot of hugging and kissing and warm interaction and touching up against each other without the standards clinical definition of erection. The irony, too, is I think cannabis enhances sensation, And that's the source of erection we'd really like there to be, not some artificial trapping of blood in certain areas of the body. Yeah.
So, Mitch, do you think that American men really have this incredible rate of medical problems with their erections, or do we just have a skewed view of the sexual act in this country?
I think it's a little of each. As the baby boomers are aging, we do see also people are more candid about fessing up to having erectile dysfunction. But this American perseveration on erection isn't absolutely required seems to really be there. And as these drugs got developed, I felt like the marketing of that got more and more severe and absurd.
So in the end here, whether we're married or single with one or a variety of sexual partners, we should be seeking out an enhanced experience with sex, not necessarily an enhanced erection. Better communication and sensuality. This may sound like a feminist stance here, but this is something that works for men just as well for women.
In fact, men who, you know, have only one partner and who report a lot of depth in the relationship in general also do report enhanced sexual experiences, where folks who have multiple partners and don't have the same level of connection often in the long term suggest that their sex is not enhanced. In fact, it's no longer as fulfilling and connecting as it could be.
And there's also that BBC report earlier this year showing that married couples actually have more sex over their lifetime than their single counterparts.
And that's a study that my wife reminds me of often.
Mitch, I want to thank you again for joining us here today. This has been a great topic.
Always a pleasure, Chris.
Dr. Mitch Earlywine is professor of psychology at State University of New York. He's author of the book Understanding Marijuana, A New Look at the Scientific Evidence, and editor of the new book Pot Politics. We have links to the books at normalaudiostash.com.